So we're back here live at the Hunt Expo, Mule Deer Foundation Hunt Expo, conservation at its finest. And I wrestled Matt Howell, Muley Matt. A lot of you guys know him as Muley Matt. And he's going to share with us a couple of stories and catch up with him. So what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. Just loving the show again. I think this is 9 years in a row that I've made it out. So I'm excited to be here. Definitely did my donations to Full Curl today. So
yeah, me too.
And I put my donations in for the $5 tags as well. Haven't drawn one, but hey, somebody has to win, right?
Yes, that's for sure. I've known a lot of people, though, so that makes you feel like you actually have a chance when you know people that have actually won it.
So. Right. Yeah. We were talking about that just a minute ago. It seems like every year you know at least one person that wins a sheep tag. So
yeah.
Makes you always feel good that somebody's winning. I'm somebody you know. So.
Right. Right. The sheep tags. I don't know. Because there's always conspiracy theory going around. But I always, people are like, oh, I don't do that because they always give it to people that are, you know, on the other draw for the other tags, or the 200 tags, you know, for the final
right.
tags or whatever. They're always giving it to people that are, you know, part of the organization.
Yeah.
This and that. But.
You hear that, but for me, I look at it as a donation to conservation. You know, if you look at it that way, if you ever pull a tag, then hey, there's a bonus.
Exactly.
And if not, then you know what? You've made a contribution and done a little bit on your part, so.
For sure. So, what have you been up to?
Wow. I got a little bit of hunting in this year, but otherwise, you know, I have kids and family business, so staying busy with all that. But I had a couple good tags this year, a couple solid hunts, a couple hunts that had some kind of emergency interruptions in them that were tags that I was planning on staying for 2 weeks and ended up hunting a couple days and having to leave. So, but otherwise, it was a good year for me. You know, continuing to live the dream.
Yeah. right now, you're the president of?
President of Four Corners SCI.
Four Corners.
Uh-huh. And then I sit on the board for the Four Corners Mule Deer Foundation.
Okay.
So, you know, a big part of what I do and what I believe in is not just being a hunter and spending money on a tag, and that is my conservation, but,
right.
you know, I believe in putting in a lot of time, effort, you know.
Some sweat equity.
Sweat equity. I don't have, you know, billions in my bank to, you know, contribute a lot of money. So in change, I just go out and give them my time. All last week, I was in Reno with SCI. You know, we are talking a lot about the wolf introduction in Colorado and raising funds and awareness for that. It's not something we are wanting to see happen.
Right.
You know, specifically the numbers they're wanting to bring in, the locations they're wanting to put them. The state of Colorado is not set up. There's not enough room for the wolves to be dumped in high numbers in a short term. You know, and they're looking at doing, you know, twice what they did in Yellowstone in a matter of, you know, 3 years.
Wow.
And we've all seen what happened in Yellowstone. And you know, to have twice that number, it not only would be bad for wildlife, it'd be bad for the wolves. You know, we don't want to see the wolves suffer. And if they put them in there and those kinds of numbers, you know, they're gonna end up suffering.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I there's a lot of talk about getting them delisted all over the place, and I don't know. I have such mixed reservations about it all. I mean, I look at it so I have a degree in wildlife management and ecology, and I look at it from that standpoint. I look at it from with the hunter's hat on. I look at it from a guy who wants to see, you know, lots of deer and elk and everything, and it's such a hard thing because you see in places where it works, but it hasn't been here for so long,
right?
That it's going to take so many amount of years for Mother Nature to right the ship when you introduce this new, because it's new.
Well,
even though it was here 100 years ago, it's new now.
Well, and they're bringing in a new species. You know, it's not the species that was there before. They're bringing in a Canadian gray wolf.
Yeah.
And so it's not a reintroduction, although they're calling it that. It's actually an introduction because it's a new species
that's
not native. And, you know, there's a lot going on in Colorado right now. They have located a pack in northern Colorado. Two confirmed kills so far. One was a cow elk and the other was a moo cow. So, you know, right there it shows you that they're not just going to, you know, kill wildlife. They're going to be killing livestock as well.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's something that we're going to have to deal with if the ballot passes. And you know, that's something that we're going to have to look at. And unfortunately, it's on the ballot. And with that, this, if this goes through and they vote it through, then this would be the first species ever that's introduced via the ballot box. So right. Now we're talking about wildlife management left up to the mass majority rather than the people who actually have a degree.
Right.
You know, like yourself and people who are being paid and have studied and know what is best for the land. So it's more of management off of emotions rather than off of facts.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in the state of Colorado, there's a lot of that.
That the arguments on both... On the opposite side, it's usually all about emotion. It has not much to do with fact or science in any way. But you know, we have wolves in Arizona, but they're Mexican gray wolves, and they're typically don't. I mean, they hunt, they kill, and they're but
right.
I don't think they have done a real impact there. But I think if you introduce a Canadian gray wolf, you know, to Arizona, there's going to be problems.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is a lot of the areas they're looking at introducing the Wimminich Wilderness, for instance, that's southwest Colorado.
Yeah.
You know, you're not more than a day's trek one of these packs to get into New Mexico and then Arizona as well. So,
for sure.
And then obviously Utah is concerned. We heard that today and a lot of the talks about, you know, predator control and trying to keep wolves from becoming established in this state. So, you know, and I'm not anti-wolf by any means, but I just don't think when you look at a state who they're struggling with their elk population and their deer population, it's going down. They do have a great moose population, one of the only western states where the moose population is actually increasing and becoming healthier. Nice. But all those things are going to go away, you know. And Colorado Parks and Wildlife, they have a gag order on them right now by the governor that they are not allowed to speak about this. But if you look at anything that they put out prior to this, they've always taken a stance against the introduction of wolves in the state of Colorado because it is not in the best interest of the wildlife of the state of Colorado.
Right.
So, you know, that to me says a lot. Unfortunately, you know, the governor's taken the power away from Parks and Wildlife to have any say-so in what's happening. So
that's crazy. So, I mean, to me, this is the Brooklyner, the New Yorker in me coming out. That sounds like shady, like... Somebody's getting paid off somewhere.
And it's, you know, there's a lot that can be said, you know, that the governor and his husband have kind of worked together on this. You know, he's a big supporter of PETA and has personally come out and said that he will make sure that everybody that's on the Wildlife Commission is handpicked by him.
Wow.
So now you have people who are, you know, working for Parks and Wildlife and being appointed by the governor that may not hunt, may not consider hunting a tool for wildlife management. And you know, the sad thing about it is the people that are saying, hey, wolves are a wildlife management tool, they actually you can't control wolves. They're not a management tool. You put them in there, and we can see it time and time again. I mean, you look at the grass carp that have been introduced in the East and Midwest, you know, to help clear up some of those lakes, and they are prolific now. And now they're trying to figure out, how do we get rid of these? You know, and it happens time and time again when they try to induce a natural, you know, whether it be a predator or something, you know, to an ecosystem to make changes. Well, you can't manage the wolves. We've seen that in every single state, and we've heard from every single state, we need help controlling these wolves. So there's no way to manage it. With hunters, you can manage it. You can choose what tags are available, how many, what species, when do you hunt them. So if a state is given the funds to do so, then they can so manage their wildlife populations that way. And to me, that's the best way to manage it.
For sure.
Not to bring in a species that you can't control. And, you know, I know that they're talking about delisting the wolves in March. If that happens, it will go to court, and they will remain protected until the courts have heard it out. And so who knows how long that could be, you know. And we've seen in other states like Wyoming where the, you know, the courts fought the grizzly bear hunts.
Right.
And they got those overturned. So there's, you know, it's a lot of this emotion that we talked about earlier that is controlling. You know, people don't want these predators hunted or controlled.
Right.
They feel like, hey, just leave Mother Nature up to it and she'll take care of it herself. The problem is a lot of those people that are saying that are going out and voting for these things, they don't go out into nature. They're not the ones out there looking. They've never seen, you know, deer die during the winter. They've never seen, you know, the suffering that takes place out there, you know. And so for them to have a say-so in the management of those animals with no knowledge whatsoever, whether it be firsthand educational knowledge and just going straight off emotion,
right,
is asinine.
Yeah, for sure. What are what are some of the things listeners could do to for the immediate problem that you're having with Colorado?
Well,
what are some of the things they could do?
About the only thing right now we can do in Colorado is raise funds to try to fight this ballot. And
right.
that'll be, there's a group out there called CPW, Coloradoans Protecting Wildlife. They are putting together a campaign where they will be releasing on different media platforms, commercials, Facebook, Instagram, as well as flyers and door-to-door stuff. To educational material to try to let people know that, hey, if you bring the wolves here, the Colorado outdoors that you know will not be the same. You know, it's going to change. It's going to look different. And so right now, the best thing people can do is spread the word, help educate people. You know, if they're inclined, they can, you know, donate money.
Right.
I'm not asking for donations.
No.
I mean,
yeah,
that's
for
exactly,
sure.
That's where we're at on the stage. Unfortunately, it's on the ballot.
Yeah.
Come November, there will be a vote, and it will be a yes or no vote. Do we bring X number of wolves to Colorado and put them here in the next 3 years, or do we not?
Unreal. Crazy, 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 crazy.
Yeah,
it's kind of sad the way the world has become. It's not just in this niche.
No, it's not.
It's like everything's just man.
It's a different world.
I don't even want to get started going down that.
I know,
but it's pretty shitty. Well, they're obviously doing a sound check for tonight's banquet.
Right.
We picked the wrong spot. We got kids screaming, running by. But it's Saturday, so, you know, it's kind of hard to get to a quiet room in this
place.
Yeah,
at this hall on Saturday is nuts. This place is packed, so,
yeah.
You know, it's well worth coming down and checking out, but it's also, you got to be prepared. There's people everywhere.
that's for sure. So, if you could share with us one of your favorite hunting stories.
Yeah, so I love sharing stories about my kids. My dad, you know, he got me into hunting, other people's hunts. So usually when people ask me for a hunting story, it's usually along those lines. But I'll give you a funny story.
Okay.
And we'll go with my dad for that one. And because he probably won't ever listen to your podcast, I feel okay sharing that. But
throw him under the bus.
Right, we'll throw him under the bus. Because he drew an elk tag up in Colorado in a limited unit. And in that unit, there were not very many tags. So there weren't a bunch of hunters out. And so far on this hunt, and 3 days in, he hadn't seen anybody. And my dad has this little thing. When he has to go to the bathroom in the woods, he likes to find a spot where he can kind of overlook a bowl or, you know, kind of watch an area, uh-huh. big open meadow, and sit on the edge of it or whatever.
Did he get caught with his pants down one time
before?
Yeah,
kind of. So he goes and finds a spot. And he's overlooking this big bowl. He's got a tree right next to him. He sets his gun down on the tree, you know, and drops his pants and uses the bathroom. And he always powders up afterwards so he doesn't shave. So he powders up. And when he did that, when he went to powder up, he stepped forward so that he wasn't, you know, getting powder in, you know, in his shorts and stuff. But when he did step forward, he looked around the tree and there was a guy sitting right on the other side of the tree. And he had just walked up on this guy's glass and spot.
And started taking a shit.
It took a dump right there on his glass and spot. So it's a pretty funny story. I had to share that with you. But, hunting stories. You know, this year we came to Utah and hunted the general hunt this year. And there was four of us. And we had a great hunt. But it's definitely interesting to me how every state and even in each unit, the hunts can be so different. I was expecting to do a lot of hiking and a lot of backcountry stuff. And you get into the unit and you start to realize that, hey, that may not be, you know, the best way to hunt this unit. And so we ended up spending a lot of time, you know, driving roads to glassing points and glassing and looking for bedded bucks and stuff like that. But we got in on a few bucks during that hunt. A lot of the bigger bucks, we glass them up and they'd be up on private or headed up to private. But, you know, we had a great hunt this year. We ended up taking a couple of nice bucks out of there, nothing giant. But I'm blown away and it excites me in a way. But I'm blown away also because, you know, as a kid, I was always backcountry, you know, Southwest Colorado, hiking in, camping. You know, to me, that was always hunting. And as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that there's a whole different world out there. You know, I've hunted now in a few different states, you know, in Idaho and New Mexico this year as well. And, you know, you start to find out that you've really got to change your hunting style and tactics to fit not only the terrain but also the animal movement and their habits.
Right.
And in that particular hunt, you know, we spent a lot of time in the truck, which is unreal for me and, you know, not something I try to do. But we spent a lot of time in the truck just covering ground.
Right.
So it was a great hunt. And then in New Mexico, I ran into the same thing. And down there, I was in a unit that was covered with oil field roads. I mean, it was oil field roads, the top of every canyon and the bottom of every canyon. And, you know, when I first drew the tag, I was like, man, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to hike as far away from the road as I can, get away from people.
Right.
And I did that the first 5 days of the hunt and got up there and I could not locate a decent buck. I found a forky and
right.
a little 3-point, some does. But I could not locate an animal in those, and I was hiking my butt off, and it was cold. I mean, -6 degrees, you know, a wow. foot of snow, and it was not fun. I mean, you know, the kind of hunting where your eyelashes start freezing, and you're just thinking, what am I doing? So I ended up, the last day of my first trip down, I ended up hopping in the truck, driving up to a new area, left my camp set up, and went into a new area on my way home, and ended up turning up a nicer buck. And didn't get on him that night. He actually ran across the road in front of me with some does and kind of took off up the hill. And it was an archery hunt, so chasing him that time of year is kind of stupid. It's,
right.
you know, I just let him go and took notes where he was. And came back the next week and got in there. And there was quite a few deer in there. But what I realized is these guys that hunt this unit and do well actually have a driver, and they sit in the passenger seat with their bow in hand, arrow knocked.
Oh, like straight up road hunting.
I mean, straight up road hunting, and I had never seen that. I mean, I've been out here on the Wasatch Front before
yeah.
and seen guys doing that on, you know, side-by-sides and four-wheelers, and I laughed, you know, like,
right.
okay, that can't actually be real. You know, that can't right. actually be
oh,
how people hunt.
It's very, very, very real.
And we saw some of the nicer bucks in the unit were taken that way. I mean, guys, literally the driver would pull up, slow down, and these deer are so used to the oil field traffic that they just stand there. And as long as you don't shut the truck off, they
right.
don't take off. So the driver would slow down, the passenger would hop out, and the driver would take off. And there's this guy standing there at full draw, and the deer's kind of like, oops, you know, you get
yep.
the deer in the headlight.
The rolling
so,
blind.
Exactly. So it was a different world, you know, for me, and I hunted it solo, and so I didn't have a driver. and it was funny because I had a nice buck, probably a mid-180s buck, which was giant back forks, super tall, real short front forks, but a buck that I had 20 yards from the road, and I stopped, and I took pictures of him, and I'd never once thought, or had a thought cross my mind that I would want to get out of the truck and shoot him because I was right on the road.
Right.
But what I did do is I figured out, okay, if I pull up to this next canyon, I can go up and around and see if we can, you know, get up above him and work my way back down to him. So I put on a stock that was probably, I don't know, maybe a quarter mile stock. It wasn't huge, but
right.
on this buck that I could have just got out of the truck and shot. So
yeah.
it was kind of crazy and interesting, different style of hunting. But to me, it was more important for me to take that buck on his own terms, you
right.
know, or, you know, be on the ground, my feet, his feet, you yep. know, my senses, his senses. So.
Yeah.
We got some serious noise going on. Don't
yeah,
we?
The door was open.
The guy opened the door and it's like
concert.
Concert over there. Yeah, this is going to be one of those episodes I'm going to spend like 4 hours trying to
edit out some of the background
noise.
18
minutes of talking. But Jesus, yeah, we definitely picked the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man.
But it was a fun hunt. I ended up getting in on a couple different bucks. I had probably 3 different bucks I was within 40 yards of. That country's thick, some pinyon, juniper. So just because you're 40 yards does not mean you're getting a shot.
Right.
And I didn't get a shot at those bucks. I did locate a buck one day and put a stalk on them. Got to about 50 yards. And when anybody that's hunted in the snow and the cold knows that snow gets super crunchy.
Yeah, it's loud.
So, you know, when you're stalking mule deer in those big satellite dishes they have for ears, man, I got to 50 yards and I could see his attitude just start to change in his bed.
Right.
And I knew that was going to be my only shot. And I had he was bedded on the opposite side of a tree, but I had a hole through the tree I could send an arrow through. So I ranged the buck. He's 50 yards. I ranged the limbs on the tree. It says 45. I came to full draw, settled my pin, let that arrow go. And that arrow caught one of those limbs and just yeah. dug right into the dirt right behind that buck. And when I went and looked, one of the limbs actually came back towards me quite a ways and
okay.
just didn't get picked up and probably was like 42 yards, something like that. But just clipped that limb and it was a nice buck. He was, you know, and I'm not a big score guy as far as I don't go after score. I see something I like. And this was an old, mature buck. He had a big scar on his face. I got a couple pictures of him before I started my stalk. And big scar on his face and just old, big old, I mean, I don't know, man. He probably 6.5, 7-inch bases, you know, a lot bigger than a Coke can. And just good match. You could tell he was digressing, you know, an old buck. But that's the type of buck that I was after in that unit, you know, something that was old and mature. I passed up bucks that would have scored better than him that were 3 years old, you know, and in the 175, 180 range that just had beautiful forks,
yeah,
you know, and not quite there on the mass yet because they're young, but just some beautiful bucks and let them walk. Because, you know, for me, and I have nothing against people shooting small deer, you know, they can shoot what they want to shoot, it's their tag,
right?
But for me, you know, if I have meat in the freezer, you know, I love going out after the challenge of putting myself up against a big mature buck. And so I don't know, I have deer that there's, yeah, I have like a hit list or an idea in my mind of what I'd like to have someday. I want to shoot a buck that has a cheater, that has a dropper, or, you know, that forks, you know, so it's like a split right. cheater, you know. I'd love to shoot a drop time buck. I've got to hunt a couple and did not harvest them, but for me, there's, I'm not about the score, but it's about just, you know, going up against that mature buck that's yeah. outlived and outlasted, and, you know, putting my skills up against his on the being on the ground, spotting stock, you know, sneaking in and getting past all his senses.
Yeah. I'm with you on a lot of that. I mean, definitely with you on the road hunting thing. I had a very similar situation. I was here, actually, in Utah. I was on the General Archery, and I had this, like, 160 buck come out, stand there on the road, like, and it was a two track, so it wasn't mm-hmm. even a real road, and standing in front of me, I mean, I opened the door, I got out, my friends that were with me, they were like, shoot him, like, I don't know, man, it's just not gonna, I want that deer, I like that deer,
right,
but I'm just not gonna, it's just not gonna do it for me.
Right.
I didn't come here to do that.
You didn't come here to post a picture of a dead deer on Instagram.
Right. No. I did.
No, and I, you know, I see a lot of that, and that's fine if that's what they're doing. But for me, I don't need to lessen. I start the season with standards.
Yeah.
And I don't need to lessen those standards just so I can punch a tag or have someone tell me, hey, yeah. nice job. And, you know, I know there's people out there that love to fill every tag, and that's fine. You know,
that's me.
But
I do.
I'm okay passing a few.
I have a really hard time once it starts getting to the end of the hunt, not just
yeah.
shooting something, just well, to shoot something. I will admit that is me,
but
it has to be on my terms.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that on a few of my hunts, especially when I'm out of state and you're paying,
yes.
you know, $600-$800 for a tag or more, and you're sitting there the last couple of days and you're thinking, okay, I'm going to be eating this cash, or I can fill the tag and take something home with me.
Right.
There was a few hunts that I've taken a smaller buck, a meat buck, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, a buck that is going to taste good and maybe not as mature, but it might be a 3x4, so he's not going to turn into a giant trophy. But
yeah.
You know, and for me, filling a tag like that, that's again, that was my choice. It's not something you're going to see plastered all over social media, and I'm not going to be lying to you about, you know, what he scored. So.
Yeah.
I mean, in all honesty, I've only had a couple of my bucks scored, and
I don't score any of them.
Really? See, and
never.
I give me an idea, I eyeball them, score, but
I don't ever put a tape in.
Yeah, I like to just because it gives me an idea of, okay, you know, when I see a deer, that's the ballpark he's in, you know, and when I talk to my buddies, yeah, it's a 180 buck. Well, that's like a 180 frame. That doesn't mean I went out and okay, that's a 180 net. Because
right, yeah.
We all know how that goes. So
yeah, for sure. No, I'm okay. I'm okay at scoring on the hoof. You know, I know what a good deer is and what is not a good deer. That's
right.
That's all I need for me. Mm-hmm. And the people that I guide are that way too. Like I'm very good at choosing my clients.
Yeah,
like
that's good.
As soon as I get somebody that starts talking about inches, I start steering them down a road that he's not going to want to go with me.
Yeah. You know?
And if they do, they do, but it doesn't happen very often.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I always give them if you're looking for, you know, that inches, I'm not your guy kind of deal. Cause I mean, do I create opportunities for those type of things? Yeah, here and there. But I'm not going to freaking tell a guy. I'm not going to lie to a guy and say, yeah, I'm going to get you a 360 bull.
Right.
You know? especially with the amount of points that you have. You know, it's like we're not going to get the best unit in the state. Yeah. You know, but
That's good. You know, and if people can accept that and be okay with, you know, and I mean, I love what Pope and Young does. I love what SCI does, what Boone and Crockett does, and what they're doing, and why it's important to take your animals and get them scored and actually get them in the books. And all three of those organizations will allow you to put your animal in anonymously, so you don't have to put it in your name. But what it does is it keeps a record. And a lot of people don't know this, but there's been times that SCI has actually gone in and used those records to prove legislatively or in a court of law that what we are doing as hunters is making for larger and healthier herds by using those numbers. And saying, hey, look, we have more mature deer that are in the books from in these last two decades than they did the five decades prior. And so being able to do that with a lot of these animals, and especially on an international scale with SCI, it's been huge. But that's, you know, I still encourage people that, you know, if you have a book animal, you can put it in the book. Mm-hmm. You don't have to use your name if you don't want to. But, you know, because a lot of people are like that. Hey, I don't need to have my animal in the book. You know, that's not what it's about. But, you know, when it comes to the conservation side, having the records of those animals and showing that what we do as hunters makes a difference, you know, that is important. So I would encourage people, if you have a book animal, even if you don't want to put your name in the book, you can do it anonymously and get that information in the book. So,
yeah, I've entered a couple. I entered my Ibex in SEI. Uh-huh. I had an antelope that I shot way back in early 2002, 2004, something like that. I can't remember now. And for a while, he was the number 11 Pope and Young by Spot Stalk. I put him in. I think I have one or two deer, but I just started like getting to a point where it was like inches was very, it was a very real thing for me for a long time. Like, I was always wanting to keep up with the Joneses, but it's been probably 15 years where I was like, I really don't. Yeah. I just want to shoot something that if I see something I like, I'm going to go shoot it.
Right. And I think as hunters, we mature through different phases in our life. And not everybody goes through the same phase at the same time. But, you know, there's a time in my life where it was about, you know, inches. Like, I wouldn't shoot a big, giant 3x4 because he's not going to score as well as a smaller 4x4 next to him.
Right.
You know? Now I'm at a point in my life where it's like, hey, that's a bigger deer. You know, that's a more mature deer. That deer is more of a challenge to me. You know? And so, in reality, I think, you know, as hunters, and I see this with a lot of my buddies, a lot of my friends, you know, it's like you go through a phase where it's like, hey, if it's legal, I'm killing it, you know, and then they kind of get to the point where they say, okay, I've killed a few. Now I want to test myself and see, you know, can I get one that scores this, you know, and then they go after the score, or maybe they go after the maturity first, and then they realize, hey, man, I've never killed a buck that's over 190, and I'd like to have one that is, so then they kind of go after the score. So, you know, I don't think that for me, I don't judge anybody on what their reason is for shooting or not shooting a deer.
Same here.
As long as they're doing it legally and ethically, you know,
whatever makes you happy. I guess that's kind of what my point is, I guess. But I've been on both sides of the spectrum, and like you said, as the years go by, things, you know, it ebbs and flows, it changes. You know, I know in Arizona now, I haven't shot a buck in Arizona in a couple of years because I'm trying to kill one of a certain caliber.
Right.
You know, and both species of white and coos deer and muleys. You know, actually this year I talked to myself how to talk myself. I did go after, in December I went after a pretty small buck because I knew I only had a few days left to fill a tag. But, you know, it ebbs and flows. It's like days that I'm like, oh, you know, I'm this or bust, and then there's other days where I'm like, I don't just give a shot, I just want to go kill
something. Right?
You know, but yeah.
Well, I will encourage everybody to go out and experience the high country at some point during an archery mule deer hunt, because those thunderstorms that come through there, you want to talk about something that get your heart rate up and spend a few afternoons on
a few
hillsides where it's like, you know, that pucker factor goes way up. So.
I think
you know, people that get out there for the experience, you know, and take that home with them.
Yep.
You know, I could tell you some great stories about some of the most incredible hunts where we never punched a tag, but the experience itself was just incredible, you know, and had I killed a lesser deer, it would not have made for a better story.
Right.
You know, so That one hunt in particular, where my buddy Jason actually had a tag, and we were after a really big, I mean, he was pushing 200 typical in full velvet in the high country, and we sat through two of those thunderstorms that came through with lightning popping on the ridge we were on.
Oh, geez.
And I mean, you want to talk about at times thinking, why am I here?
Did you put your bow like 30 yards?
We found, of course, you're way above timberline. You know? I mean, we're at 13,000 on this one.
Oh, wow.
And we're trying to get it. We got above this buck to drop in on him and get the wind right. And the storm moves in and we got stuck. And we found the biggest rocks we could find and literally like fetal position up against them, moved our packs away, our bow away, right. Set them by other rocks. You know, it was one of those pucker factors, like you said. And when it's, when lightning is striking and most of the strikes are below you the bowl, you know, it definitely makes you think, okay, wait, why was I up here again?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
No, I'm actually here in Utah. I got caught 2 years in a row, and it was like a hailstorms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was brutal. They were pretty short, which was great.
Yeah,
I actually killed both years. I killed the buck right after.
And that's what I was going to say is a lot of times if you can stick those out and do it in the safest manner possible, you know, if you can stick that out, a lot of times, well, almost 95% of the time, those deer will get up and at least move and rebed, shake off that water, get the hail off of them, whatever, and they'll rebed. And you can either get in close and get a shot, or you maybe, you know, they move from one bed to another and you can pick them up. So, yeah, being in there right after a storm, you know, I hate to tell people to stay up on the mountain because I'm not going to tell them that. But if you're in there and you're in a place where you can be there right after the storm, that's, you get some serious movement during that time.
Yeah, they both, it's funny. And I found my buck, and there was a rainbow. There was a rainbow in the sky, and it was
cool.
Like pointing right at him when I walked up on him.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I got a picture of that. I was like, oh, there's a rainbow. I'm going to get a picture of this and the buck and everything. It was fun. But
yeah, that's great.
Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on and
appreciate it,
sharing some knowledge with us on the situation in Colorado and the United States period, really.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. Just in the United States, you know, wildlife management, we used to be the country every other countries look to as far as managing wildlife, and I'm afraid we're going to see that go the other direction if we start letting people decide what happens to wildlife rather than the professionals. So.
Right. That's so crazy. It's so crazy to me because I used to think that Colorado was doing, like, because they were putting out that Hug a Hunter program and stuff. Like, I felt like they were really trying to educate the mass populace that hunting is good.
Well, and they do. Unfortunately, you know, with some of the other regulations and laws that change, such as, you know, now it's, well, Colorado is one of the early states to allow, you know, legal use of recreational marijuana, and one of the early states to do it, you know, for medical marijuana as well. It changed the, you know, the culture of the state. We had people moving to the state who knew nothing about hunting, and then they began to vote on those things. So, and it's not, you know, this isn't the anti-hunters versus the hunters even. This is just people that aren't educated, and in their minds they think, man, that'd be really cool. We wouldn't have to go to Yellowstone to see wolves. We could just, you know, maybe go up and drive around in the mountains and see some, or get to hear them howl or something.
It's not the reality.
Yeah. So, and those people are the people we just need to educate and say, hey, look, you know, wolves, we're not saying wolves are bad, but this many wolves in this area in such a small country, you know, because Colorado, and for those that have been in rural Colorado, it's not like it's wide, wide open. Yes, we do have some vast wilderness areas, but those wolves, and especially the number they're talking about, are not going to stay right in those areas. They're going to move
them
over. I would have to look at the legislation, but I was told the way it read, it's twice the amount that was in Yellowstone.
It's a lot of wolves.
So. Wow. And I've heard different numbers. So I, you know, I've heard anywhere from 8 to 1,200 wolves.
Jesus.
So, you know, you put those numbers
Canada's
out.
Canada's like, yeah, like, oh, take them.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of issues when you start talking about relocating animals. You know, if the wolves don't get delisted, it's something they can't do, you know,
right.
Because it's a protected, you know, it's an endangered species or threatened species. So then it's U.S. Fish and Wildlife that would have jurisdiction. But if they do get delisted, which every other state is hoping for, that actually hurts Colorado, because then at that point, it's up to each state to manage them, and they can go get wolves and bring them in.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm happy for all the other states if we get them delisted. But, you know, for Colorado, if we don't get this, you know, this legislation stopped, or if we don't get this vote, for them to vote no on this, then, you know, that would actually hurt us.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
Crazy. So I know we keep talking about wolves, and I hate to bring that up, but
no, it's great. You know, it's not something that we've, you know, it's definitely not a stuff that I've had on the podcast before, right, which is good. I always want to bring the listeners stuff that they're not used to hearing about. This is awesome.
Well, I think we as hunters, we need to understand that a whole lot more goes on when it comes to wildlife management than us just pulling the trigger during season.
Yeah.
You know, Mule Deer Foundation here, they sponsor this Western Hunting Expo, Western Hunting and Conservation Expo, and they do a great job in the off season of helping out with the wolves, and or not the wolves, with the deer, and doing deer transplants and moving deer out of rural areas, you know, or urban areas into rural areas, and you know, they've done a lot, and I think everyone needs to go out and support those organizations, whether it be Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Mule Deer Foundation, Turkey Federation, Trout Unlimited, you know, whatever your passion is.
Right.
You know, for me, it was SCI. SCI keeps 70, you know, the local banquet, 70% of the money raised stays there locally. You know, so for me, that was a big deal. That's why I got involved with my feet on the ground with SCI. But everybody should go out, find an organization that mirrors their passion and become a part of it, and get out there and don't just go hunting, you know, for a week a year. Get out there and in the off season, mm-hmm. spend some time with these organizations helping out, whether it be helping, you know, get donations for their banquet so they can raise money, going to a banquet to help them raise money, or getting involved with a project. Everyone should get out there and get involved.
Absolutely. Awesome, man. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.